everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom is a huge U of A basketball fan, and he was hanging on, well, my goodness.
Triple overtime. But it was a gutsy win for the Cats.
Yeah, because it was like 91-91 after two.
Yeah, I think the final score was 105-97 or something like that.
Utah really fell flat there in the
third overtime.
They ran out of gas.
The air went right out of the building. The crowd, you couldn't hear them anymore. Yeah. It was like, we can't last this much against the Wildcats. It's over.
Yeah.
And it was.
There's nothing in the tank by the third overtime. Welcome, folks. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on the campus of Bustos Media, where we've got five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news talk. We're now in our 14th year with the radio project, 36th year in Tucson Media. Worldwide live listening, and we've got all of our podcasts conveniently archived at buckmastershow.com. Our telephone interviews for folks that like to join us on the live line, which is 790-2040. That is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. On Friday, a big shout out to our media friends who conveniently have a link on their homepage to the Buckmaster Show, so they can easily come over and sample our content. One of our great supporters, Dylan Smith, the founder and editor, co-founder of TucsonSentinel.com, and he's with us today. Hey, Dylan.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. Taken one day at a time. Also, thanks to the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. That's Dan Shear's group down there. Tucson Local Media Group, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Leah Marquez Peterson returns now to the program. It's been, almost 8 or 9 months. Leah, since you were back with us, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah, we had some scheduling issues, but I'm glad we got you back. Leah was elected to the Arizona Corporation Commission in November of 2020 as the first Latina to serve in a statewide seat in the state of Arizona, and the only commissioner not based in Maricopa County, and you are seeking re-election.
I am.
You're
busy
standing
campaigning around the state right now.
On the five-member board, so you've got, four Republicans and one Democrat.
Right, and I'm the only one running for re-election.
Really?
The
three seats, the only incumbent. Okay. Leah is the former president and CEO. She was there 10 years at the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. Among the many duties of the Arizona Corporation Commission, I always like to kind of fill people in because they don't follow
that. Yes, nobody knows
so here it is quickly. The commission regulates utility services and railroad and pipeline systems. Arizona is one of only seven states with a constitutionally formed commission, and one of only 13 states with elected commissioners. In the other states, the commissioners are appointed by either the governor or the legislature. So you really do have a lot in your portfolio, right?
We do. And of the utilities, if you don't mind me listing them.
No,
it's
go ahead.
Electric, gas, water, wastewater. So all the private investor-owned companies. So for those of us here in Southern Arizona, that's Tucson Electric Power, Southwest Gas, the retail electric co-ops that operate, more in our rural areas of Southern Arizona.
Like Trico?
Trico, Sulphur Springs in Cochise County and others. We regulate about 400 utilities.
What about water?
Water that are private and investor-owned. So not Tucson Water, because I do get a lot of calls about Tucson Water, but the private investor-owned that are throughout the region.
Anything with cybersecurity?
We have limited jurisdiction with telecommunications. It's cybersecurity, from our perspective, is more about how do we protect our utilities from cyber attacks, physical attacks. So we have a lot of conversations around that.
And that water utility up in the Phoenix area they were kind of cut off. I think it was Dylan helped me.
Rio Verde.
Yeah. was that one being regulated by you guys?
Yeah, so that was interesting. Scottsdale Water, which is a municipally run water, we don't regulate, but the city of Scottsdale had voted to stop providing water in a standpipe, which is like an above-ground
that
tank.
That made front page news of the New York Times.
They
that
called in the Corporation Commission to ask whether our private water utilities could serve. So it took a while. We went through the process and ultimately voted to approve EPCOR is serving them now.
So they get water now.
They do, right. They've got short-term from Scottsdale, and then EPCOR will be the long-term plan.
All right, Dylan, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was kind of thinking, you know, running through all of that, all those responsibilities is a good way to start this, because really the Corporation Commission is the elected government body in our state that pretty much has the most impact on people's day-to-day lives.
I'd agree. I'd say the most impact on people's wallets. We're setting the rates, tariffs for all those different industries.
We pay so much attention to what the governor's doing, what the legislature's doing, what Congress is doing. But when it comes time to pay the bills, actually it's what the Corporation Commission is approving or not approving that kind of really affects things.
And absolutely.
To that end, I've noticed the last few months that my bills have gone up a lot.
Your power bills?
A particular bill?
Both electric and gas. Even though we seem to be using less energy in my home, especially gas, we used twice as many heating hours last winter as we have this winter, but we're paying the same.
Yeah.
That basically means my bills almost double.
It's a good question.
What's going on?
It's a question I get out in the community quite a bit throughout the state. On your bill, your electric and your gas bill, there's a fuel surcharge line on there. And what's happening is the increased cost of natural gas that's occurred because of supply issues, the freeze that happened in Texas, which is where our gas is distributed from, that price went up dramatically, and you see that fuel surcharge getting passed along to customers on your bill.
So
you saw it across the board on electric and gas. And so it's something that we have this interesting balance at the commission that we want to support the right capital investment by utilities to ensure reliability, because that's top of mind. Cannot have rolling blackouts.
We don't want to be Texas.
We don't want to be California. but it has to be affordable. So it's that constant balance. If you were to get into the wonkiness that is the commission, that's ultimately what we're always debating, is how far do we go and how do we ensure reliability? So in this case, you're pushing along those increased fuel prices that came from the natural gas increase, while making sure that it's affordable for people throughout the state.
Well, the big story of the week, and this front page story at the Star, Arizona Daily Star today, the Arizona Corporation Commission moved, the vote was 4-1 along party lines on Tuesday. Arizona will be the first state to repeal its relatively modest renewable mandate. What is going on there?
Yeah, and it's so timely that I was going to be here. I thought, oh, good, I'll be
perfect
on Bill's show,
there
and I will
go
explain
serendipitous
this. So let's start with the renewable energy standard, or the mandate that was put in place in 2006. And the commission at the time required that the utilities build up to 15% of retail sales as part of renewable. If you remember back in 2006, solar and wind were fairly new industries. So in essence, we, the ratepayers, subsidized this requirement to have certain percentage of renewable energy by a certain date, and it's cost us about $1.2 billion overall just on APS customers. And TEP, I have some of the data here, we're at $2.3 billion now total in the state in this renewable energy subsidy that occurred. So fast forward to this past Tuesday, that renewable energy standard is expiring in 2025. The utilities have already exceeded what the mandate was, the standard, so it wasn't necessary anymore. We are doing a review of all the rules, because not only was the renewable energy standard opened up for rulemaking, which is what it's called at the commission, we're going to go through public hearings, we're going to clean it up. The commissioners, the four of us, indicated to our staff that we don't need to continue that mandate. It is outdated, it is creating administrative burden, and the utilities have already exceeded that amount. So just on renewable energy, and I brought some data with me, APS, which is the big electric utility in Phoenix, they estimate the renewable resources to be around 17% of retail sales, or closer to 18% if you exclude the very largest customers already. So they're beyond the mandate. Tucson Electric Power, They're currently at 17% of their energy provided to customers is renewable, and they're increasing to 52% of energy by 2035. So those are outdated rules, and that's not only the case for renewable energy, but also the energy efficiency mandate that was also listed in the article expired in 2020. They've exceeded those amounts. When the rule stays in place, because we're their regulators, mm-hmm. they have compliance requirements. They have to do administrative duties mm-hmm. that are not a good use of time
so
or expenses.
So they're in compliance.
They've exceeded.
Exceeded compliance. But should they still maybe, I know you're going to have hearings around the state, right?
For about a year, right.
So would there be eventually new deadlines and new mandates?
No. So depending on the makeup of the commission, right mm-hmm. now, again, we're four Republicans, one mm-hmm. Democrat, with an election coming up, so who mm-hmm. knows how things change. When I was appointed to the commission initially in 2019 and then 2020 was elected, we were in the middle of about a four-year debate on clean energy rules. So this issue was top of mind. Whether we set and mandate a certain percentage of renewable energy or clean energy by a certain year, that was voted down. So the current makeup of the commission does not support a clean energy mandate. We think it should be an all-of-the-above approach, which means that the utilities put out all-source RFPs and say we need to build to this amount of energy to especially handle the incredible growth that's happening throughout different parts of the state. And then they go with an affordable option and move forward in that direction. They're growing still dramatically in solar and wind and battery. In fact, I was just up at Cave Creek, which is north of Phoenix, at a 1 gigawatt solar battery installation by Strata Energy. I mean, I think it's the biggest in the country. So we're still doing a lot of really incredible projects, but we're not mandating it. We're not forcing the market to comply. It's an all-of-the-above approach.
What do you think about this, Dylan?
Well, those projects you mentioned are taking place because there is a mandate. There has been.
There's not in Arizona. So we never approved a mandate except for this 2006.
Well, the percentage, and that's why they have invested the money in these projects. If you take that away, and as that growth continues, are they going to keep investing in alternative energy? Or are they just going to, you know, keep going with natural gas?
Yeah, I mean, that's a key question. Will they?
Or return to coal?
So what would motivate or incentivize APS, our largest utility in the state, to continue to support renewable energy, right? I've got a list here of projects. I won't bore you by reading them all, but their preferred plan, they estimate by 2030, 45% of APS will be renewable resources. But what is driving that is a lot of the large companies coming, especially to their territory, Google, the Microsofts, Intel's $40 billion expansion, the Taiwan semiconductor industry, are all requesting clean energy. So if the customer is requesting it, residential customers want clean energy, then the utility is responding to that and supporting those kind of projects. In addition, solar is the cheapest cost of energy resource at this time. So why would we unnaturally set a mandate in place that would force them in one way or another from the commission's perspective? And instead, we should follow kind of market principles, and they should go with the all-of-the-above approach.
There isn't a market.
There isn't a market
I only have one choice for electricity. Right. There's no market. There's no competition.
So there are different types of rates. So let's say I'm sure you're a TEP customer.
Yep.
If you can have a demand type, you can have a time of use type rate, you can have a basic charge. If you wanted 100% green now, there's a green tariff. You could pay extra to have that green tariff.
At a rate that's determined by you guys in the company, not
right.
Competition with another company, though. There is no
right.
market at play
well,
here.
That's ultimately why the commission exists, because
exactly.
They are all monopolies, all 400 mm-hmm. of them that we mm-hmm. regulate. So unlike just letting free market run with this,
which
because
done
they're
in,
monopolies.
In Texas, they did that, right?
Right. They did retail competition on portion, retail
okay.
competition.
Yeah.
But,
sorry.
Yeah, but the 400 utilities are all monopolies, so they need regulators in place, and that's the role the five of us play. We are, in essence, the ratepayers, the liaison. I'm sitting there not because I'm a nuclear engineer, but because I'm sitting there representing ratepayers with these monopoly industries.
So the basis of this line of questioning is, why shouldn't we know via the Corporation Commission how much these companies are putting into solar or wind or whatever, and what percentage of the supply is that? Shouldn't we know that? Because they are monopolies.
Absolutely.
Do we know that?
We know that.
But if you're getting rid of these reporting requirements, are we going to know that in the future?
Yeah, because there's a process called IRPs, Integrated Resource Plan. Mm-hmm. So today, and I encourage anyone listening to go on their computer, go to TEP.com or APS.com, wherever you are, and put in their search bar IRP. You're going to pull up their 15-year plan, their outlook. They put this before us every 2 years, so we're getting a new one actually any minute for their next period of time. But that talks about their projections in terms of economic development in the area, what types of energy that they're going to plan to produce. It's not done in a silo either. We have mandated, you know, required as part of the commission, that they have a stakeholder group around them that includes environmentalists and the cities and the counties and business and chambers and so on, so that they're all leaning in and weighing in. So you can see exactly what they're planning in their IRPs today for the next 15 years.
Okay, let's take a break right here and talk about Mona's Danish Bake. How about that, Leah?
Sure.
Leah and Dylan, we've got big news up at Mona's. They requested and filed the paperwork for a liquor license with Pima County. It was granted. And they are doing champagne.
Wow.
Yeah, so the mimosas are happening. They've got wine, doing beer. I believe the bottle I saw up there, the brand is Peroni, which I believe is an Italian mm-hmm. beer, but they are pouring that up there. So now you can have in the breakfast, the mimosa, then at lunch you could have a beer or a glass of wine at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our Friday focus interview today, Leah Marquez Peterson, one of five commissioners on the Arizona Corporation Commission. Leah was elected in 2020. She is a Republican, and she is standing for re-election. Dylan Smith is with me as well in studio. Dylan, editor and co-publisher and founder of the online news service TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is president of the Arizona Press Club and past chair of Lion Publishers. Lion is an acronym for Local Independent Online News Publishers.
Leah, thankfully, I'm not the president of the press club anymore.
What happened?
That burden has been relieved, actually.
Now I'm just
the secretary. I've been demoted.
Oh, okay.
you mentioned that Leah Marquez Peterson is seeking to run again. Leah, what's your main platform this go around? What do you want to accomplish?
I got to tell you, I'm putting a lot of miles on my car because we are statewide. A lot of people don't realize, but it's about energy reliability and affordable utility rates. I mean, very simple message that I'd like to be returned. I think I've done a good job. I was the chairwoman of the commission for about 2 years, and I'm the only one outside the Phoenix area. So real focus on Southern Arizona, rural communities, and certainly all the economic development happening throughout the state. But we have seen during my time on the commission rolling blackouts in California, and then the issue that happened in Texas with the freezing pipeline. So what, as chairwoman, I was able to put in place was an energy reliability summit to focus on not just this summer, because we do summer preparedness. We're in it now for this summer.
But the winter.
But yeah, what happens in over the next year or so? How do we prepare and not have rolling blackouts? Because it's life or death in Arizona if it's 115 out and you have no electricity. So we've done a good job, knock on wood, to make sure energy continues to be reliable and at affordable utility rates.
Dylan, I don't know if you realize it, but Palo Verde is the largest nuclear power plant in the United States.
One of the largest in the world, I believe.
Wow. And Leah is now the national co-chair of a group called Nuclear Task Force. Is there a feeling that we're moving more, the country, maybe the mood is changing toward nuclear power?
Yeah, I mean, I hear very positive responses to nuclear energy. The challenge we've got is it's expensive to build another Palo Verde nuclear power plant, right?
What would that cost these days?
I don't even want to guesstimate. But the state of Georgia just built Vogtle, which is additional units onto their existing nuclear power plant, and it was over budget. Took too long. It was quite a challenge. So the nuclear task force that I'm co-chairing for the National Association of Regulated Utility Commissioners, it's our national group, and the state energy offices, is really around advanced nuclear technologies, which is small modular nuclear reactors. Department of Energy has put a number of grants in related to that were being built in Wyoming and Idaho. Canada is also doing some work on that. We just need to get the cost effectiveness down. So there's a lot of innovation and new technology in advanced nuclear.
When you say small, what are we talking about? Small units?
Probably on an acre of land surrounded by acreage, you know, in terms of support. So unlike, I don't know how many acres Palo Verde is off the top of my head, but I've also seen some great technology around micro nuclear, which envision a flatbed truck with a small nuclear unit on it. They can pull in when you're in a hurricane situation and the grid has gone down. They could pull these micro units in, much like the military does, plug into the grid to bring back electricity. So there's lots of technology being tested.
Let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. The caller is Matt. Matt, you're on with Leah Marquez Peterson.
Yeah. Hey, Leah, speaking of blackouts, Director Ray of the FBI clearly tried to alert Congress that the Chinese are already in our systems and silently and dormantly ready and preparing to knock us out. What has Arizona done to fortify, to prevent that from occurring? Things like Palo Verde and other places. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, talking Matt. About cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's a good question, Matt. So even as chair several years ago, I hosted a cyber and physical security workshop and brought our utilities in that included electric, water, gas, and telecom, because we, again, have limited jurisdiction with the telecom companies, to talk about emergency response. Department of Homeland Security for the state was there, wanted to see what organization or coordination was happening. We've continued to have that conversation, and in fact, just had a public meeting around cybersecurity on Tuesday with Homeland Security coming in and talking about essential services like utilities and what kind of response we'll have. Honestly, the biggest challenge has been that the commission is under open meeting laws, which means everything's transparent, happens in public. Well, when you're talking about cyber and physical security protocols, a lot of you have to keep that confidential, right? We can't talk about the
details.
You don't
want to just list the password in your agenda?
So we're going to partner with the Department of Homeland Security in the state to manage, almost be a buffer between us and our own utilities. So they're managing the confidential piece. But we're really focused on that. We hear about cyber and physical attacks that happen across the country. We watch those closely and always alerting our own utilities who are dependent. They need to comply with federal guidelines, and they're submitting to their particular agencies now at the federal level, and we want to ensure that we're safe at the state level also.
So all of your meetings are, none of your meetings are behind closed doors?
Correct. Yeah, they're open meetings.
Even if it's like personnel or something?
No, we can go into executive session. We have a new executive director maybe 6 months ago, and that hiring process was handled in executive session. If we have a legal challenge, we need legal advice, we can go into executive session. But everything else should be out in the open.
Okay. Dylan?
You mentioned nuclear, and this is kind of a two-part question. Well, one, nuclear power seems kind of attractive in a number of ways. Once it's built, which isn't cheap, it's, you know, a
clean energy.
It's a, you know, fairly reliable and affordable source once the infrastructure is in place. Most nuclear power plants use a lot of water.
Sure.
Is that, you know, the best fit for Arizona?
Well, Palo Verde is a great example. They use a lot of water, but they worked out an arrangement with the city of Phoenix and use all reclaimed water. So they're using wastewater and filtering it and using that in the Palo Verde nuclear plant. So it's a great example. We've had other states, other countries come look at Palo Verde over the many years. So in this case, it's a good use of water.
Mm. And on the same kind of thread, so much of our power in Arizona is dependent on water. You know, it comes from dams. And with the ongoing drought and pressures from climate change, that's becoming less and less reliable. What are we going to do about, you know, trying to basically fill that hole?
Yeah, that's a good point. So each of us on the commission engage in regional conversations. So I myself am on the Western Interconnection Regional Advisory Board. We're all in some different capacity because we need to work with our neighbors. We need to buy wind from New Mexico or hydropower from the Northwest, and we need to have those other energy sources as needed as we see peak periods or the highest use of energy, especially during the hottest time of the summer. So we watch very closely the energy from the dams. SRP, which is a big electric utility in Phoenix, is not one we regulate because they're quasi-public-private. They have their own board.
They're kind of the government, but not really.
Kind of, yeah. They're complicated. So. Yeah. But they have their own entity, and they are
the
very
Salt
engaged.
The Salt River Project.
Right. Mm. So they have energy and water, and they manage those dams.
We could probably do a whole show about how they are regulated. Right.
You should have them in. They'd be very interesting. But we're working regionally, and there's a long, you know, tough conversation on how dependent are we throughout the West Coast. Texas is kind of their own country, right? Mm-hmm. They do their own thing, not interconnected to the rest of us.
Yeah.
California's making decisions, from my perspective, with a political ideology that's putting us at risk with their rolling blackouts and dependency on renewable energy so quickly. Mm-hmm. They've shut down nuclear. They've shut down natural gas, shut down coal very rapidly and put their citizens at risk, I believe. So they're working through that. So how do we as me there representing Arizona in these conversations, talk about what's happening regionally and make sure it's in the best interest of Arizona citizens.
So with the Colorado River, we're all watching, you know, it, as it rises and falls, there are implications certainly for power.
Yeah, there certainly is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that coordinated conversation that's happening even at the Capitol, you know, with the governor's administration and others, ensuring that APS, TEP, SRP are part of that conversation is important.
Dylan.
You caught me in a... I was pondering the implications of what Leah was just saying.
Yeah, I had another one for Leah, so we'll keep it with me. The Arizona Public Service rate case, and this gets... Dylan was started the questioning today, at least from his point of view. His first question was about he had noticed rates were going up at his household. This APS rate case, is it a big one?
It's our largest. So that is occurring on the 22nd, so next week. So that's what I'm doing when I'm not here is reading through the rate case. What is a rate case? If I could take just a minute.
How many pages would a rate case be?
They're about 500 pages.
500?
Right. So this is after...
Gone with the Wind length.
Right. Like Gone with the Wind.
War and Peace.
But it's after months and months of public hearings, public comment, testimony, interveners, which are stakeholders that have engaged attorneys and they're participating in the rate case. It's looking at the capital investment the company's made since the last rate case and determining if that investment is prudent. Is it in the best interest of Arizona ratepayers? We fast forward to that. We are going through this with a fine-tooth comb. We have an administrative law judge that works with us that puts a recommended order together, and then ultimately we vote on that. So it's a lot of financial analysis and looking at programs and ultimately setting the rates and determining the bill impact for APS customers in that case. We do about 40 to 50 rate cases a year.
Mm. How big a rate do they want, or what kind of percent are they generally looking for?
Well, off the top of my head, I think they came in asking for about 11%.
Whoa.
And so that's been negotiated down from there. So we'll see what ends up happening. I can't prejudge where I'm going with this because I'm like a judge in the rate case, but I'll say we're looking at a lot of different pieces of the APS rate case.
The grid is always a concern in summer, but do we worry about the grid in winter?
We do. We do winter preparedness meetings, primarily with Kinder Morgan, right?
And the pipeline people.
El Paso's a pipeline company.
Where natural gas comes from.
Right. And then with Southwest Gas, which is a distributor of natural gas. Mm-hmm. So we do winter preparedness in that regard. Especially think of this week's news, right? The incredible snowstorms happening in Flagstaff and up north and different areas. We need to make sure people are prepared for that.
Okay.
In addition to natural gas, you also, you regulate all the pipelines, basically.
Yeah, right. Pipeline safety.
Gasoline coming into Arizona is coming via
Not
pipelines.
Gasoline, just natural gas.
What? Who does the gasoline regulation for the gasoline that comes in?
I'm not
the
sure.
The pipeline, because I thought that came from El Paso, too.
Yeah, maybe that's piped in.
Might be a different type of, but we are looking at the natural gas pipeline safety.
Because
it's pressurized and so on.
Okay. Is there any, how has that industry gone, the natural gas industry? I mean, is there a glut of that? Is that affecting the market?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, as other states make decisions to not embrace as much natural gas, in Arizona, as a commission, we have supported natural gas peaker plants. What is a peaker plant? That means that at night when the sun goes down, the solar panels don't work, right? Or the wind's not blowing at certain times. So we need a consistent source of power. For us, that's nuclear energy and that's natural gas. The coal plants are still operating now, but the utilities, without a mandate from the commission, but the utilities have determined they're going to close the coal plants, and there are three left, and 2031, 2032. They're going to be phasing down till then. So we need to determine how we're going to replace that consistent source of energy, because that can run 24 hours, obviously. And that's with natural gas. So, and nuclear, if those small modular nuclear opportunities come forward. So just really looking at the balance. Again,
no more coal within 10 years in Arizona then?
Well, I mean, what I get asked when I'm out, especially campaigning, is why? Why are they closing the coal plants if you've not mandated it? And a lot of it's the federal oversight. EPA requirements have put such a burden on the coal plants. It doesn't make sense financially to continue to operate them after that time. Now, we're in a presidential election cycle. Lots could change. Who knows? Will they have a longer lifespan? I don't know. My concern as a commissioner, though, is those communities that have coal plants are aware that the time has been set as of now. Be prepared. What's your economic development plan? What else can you be producing there so we don't have ghost towns in those areas?
Like up at Kayenta on the Navajo Reservation.
Or Springerville.
Wow.
Right. So
wow.
Those kind of areas. So
that's going to be a devastating.
If that's their major industry. What else can be? And I know SRP and I believe APS have both engaged in those communities to try to figure out what else could be done. I know ASU had received a grant to do some analysis for those communities also. Hmm. I mean, we're so many years out, but that's going to go quickly.
Okay. Any final thoughts, Dylan?
Well, part of the reason the utilities are moving away from coal to wanting to use more natural gas is that flexibility. You can turn on a natural gas plant a lot more quickly than you can turn a coal plant off and on. You know, that's something that, you know, once a big pile of coal is burning, it's going to go for a while.
Right. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, that could. You can't just throw some water on it. It's
what about the possibility of transitioning those plants, much like TEP did with the generating station here, from coal to natural gas? Are they just too far from natural gas supplies?
Yeah, that it
is the infrastructure.
Yeah, so
the distributors are
transmissions there.
There,
right? So whatever they do in terms of an energy source, there it has to be transmitted on the large poles you see across the state. So that's in place. It makes it very valuable. In terms of getting natural gas via pipeline to that spot, don't know. You know, each one has different infrastructure, but they're looking at different types of industry. There was a lot of interest by the Biden administration and by the state of Arizona to participate in hydrogen. And that's very cutting edge, innovative. All the states applied for a hydrogen hub grant. Unfortunately, Arizona was not selected, but I know Texas was and Washington and a couple other states, and they're moving forward on hydrogen hub. But I know that's an area they continue to look at. The small modular nuclear, would that be a good addition to a closed coal plant in the future if the numbers pan out by that time, right? Because we're still working through the cost. So lots of innovative ideas going about, but I don't think they've settled on one answer yet.
All right. Leah Marquez-Peterson, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
From the Arizona Corporation Commissioner, and did you have a website that you want to direct people to?
Yeah, absolutely. If you could consider supporting my campaign, I'd appreciate it at voteforleah.com, voteforlea.com. I'm a clean elections candidate, so we don't have utilities engaged in our elections, so I'm soliciting $5 contributions for clean elections to qualify for state funding. So appreciate you letting me shout that out.
All right. Thank you very much, Leah. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Dylan, stick around. I've got a few things for you. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Leah Marquez Peterson, one of five commissioners on the Arizona Corporation Commission. Pretty darn important state agency. Thank you, Leah, for your support and being on the show. Dylan Smith is here, the editor, co-founder of TucsonSentinel.com. We may not be seeing as many of the A-10s flying around. They've already started to retire some of them here at DM, Dylan.
Yeah, the plans we've been hearing about for ever so long are now underway. This week, the Air Force began pulling some of the A-10s, certainly not all of them, but pulling some of them out of service. And, you know, the long-term plan is over the next maybe 5 years to no longer have A-10s flying for the U.S. Air Force. So instead, here in Tucson, they're going to bring in a wing of small, actually, prop planes.
What?
Yes. They'll be
Look
used
out,
for
there's a Spitfire.
Basically, you know, a Mustang. They kind of look like Mustangs, the new planes. They use them for reconnaissance mostly.
Wow.
Surveillance.
So folks won't be able to complain about the noise level, I guess.
A number of the pilots and certainly a lot of the ground crews who have been, you know, working on A-10s are going to be retrained and retasked to work on F-35s at other bases.
Wow. So we'll see A-10s for a few years still. Well,
they're not immediately all going away, but this week they did start pulling some of them out of service here, which is kind of there's a bit of a contrast because right now DM actually has one of their most, one of their largest deployments in their history with a lot of our, DM personnel over in the Middle East.
Really? One of the largest?
Yeah. Hmm. So to, you know, have some of them overseas doing that job and then, already starting to dial things down here makes a little bit of a contrast.
A-10's been flying for 50 years, I think.
It's
something like that.
It's amazing how long some of our equipment lasts. You know, the A-10s have been re-winged and reworked and, but the basic airframes, so many of them have, been around as long as I've been alive. And, look at the B-52s, which have been flying for as long as you've been alive. Mm-hmm. And the plans are to keep using those for another 30 or 40 years, if not even longer.
Hmm.
Some of those planes will be 100 years old by the time they are retired.
Wow. Our healthcare system is very challenging, Dylan. And I know you had a little health issue. You had a little issue. Was it last year?
Yay, believe so. But I kind of lost track of time. But yeah,
anyway,
14 months or something.
What brings this up is I get a bill in the mail yesterday. Talk about something that can really reopen a lot of wounds. Anne died August the 17th. She was in the hospital for 3 or 4 days, maybe it was even 5 days in early June. I get a bill from an anesthesia group from when Anne was in the hospital in June. And you tell me
and
about...
it just showed up?
It just shows up. And it's a big bill. And I'm going, why the heck? Why? What could...
You didn't say heck.
Oh, man. I was just furious yesterday. It's just... It opened up a lot of old wounds that certainly are are still kind of raw, right? I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, that's I think a great example of how inefficient our whole healthcare system is, that it's February now, right? That you're February. Getting a bill for something in June.
Early
that
June.
That you didn't know was even going to show up.
No.
You go, even if you have amazing health insurance, you go to the hospital, or, you know, get some kind of care, and you have no idea what you're going to owe and who you owe and when you might be billed. Mm. It's kind of just bonkers the way everything is so Byzantine and with no transparency whatsoever.
Well, everybody's always saying, you know, let's fix the border, let's close the border. That's the number one priority. How about fixing America's healthcare situation? Just, I don't know.
It's a mess.
It really is. Getting back to a news item, the primary has been moved up, the Arizona primary.
You know,
A
lot of the deadlines had to be moved around because of issues to account for possible recounts and all of the steps that need to be taken to make sure that, you know, the deadlines for sending people their ballots and to make sure that people who are overseas voters, especially we can circle back around to people who are deployed in the military or stationed, you know, overseas, that they have their chance to vote in the general election. There was basically going to be overlap where if things played out too long for possible recounts because of the way the threshold for recount was so recently changed, we're seeing more of them, it's possible that people could be sent ballots that didn't have certain races on them because they weren't done yet. And kind of, you know, straightened all of that out. The governor and state legislature were, you know, kind of basically up against their own deadline, you know, kind of their own making to make some tweaks to get things all lined up so that we don't end up with that kind of problem, you know, come the fall.
You were going through all the numbers, I know, at Tucson Sentinel about when all was said and done, you had a bunch of matches going on up until the end of the year. How do the numbers look now?
We are very, very grateful for the amazing support we had for the Tucson Sentinel in that year-end fundraising campaign. We came out, you know, basically well ahead of our projections, and it you know, really heartened us and gave us a good solid foundation to keep moving, keep growing, keep digging into things this year. Of course, we're not done yet. We need to keep, you know, raising money all year round. If somebody wants to pitch in and support real local independent news in Tucson, go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog and or /donate, and you can you know, throw in your hopefully more than 2 cents to keep the Sentinel staff digging into things.
Can you look at the Sentinel without paying?
Absolutely. You know, we're a nonprofit, and we believe that everybody should have free access to our work. We don't have a paywall. We're not going to put up a paywall. It's important to us that whether you give us money or not, you can read our news, and hopefully when you realize that it's important and vital to our community, that you'll pitch in, not just to pay for yourself, but so that your neighbors and folks across town have access to real news.
I think it's a great service, and I've thrown a little money at it, and proud of it. Thank you, Dylan, for your support. All right. All right, Dylan, I hope you have a great weekend. We've got Dan Gibson come. Thank you, sir. Dan Gibson coming up with our weekend watch. What's going on this weekend? Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, Fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. It is time for the weekend. The weekend has officially begun on the Buckmaster Show when we hear it stirring it up. The Silver City folks, great sponsor of the Buckmaster Show, our weekend watch sponsor, Silver City, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. A ton of outdoor activities, great places to stay, great places to eat. Visit Southwest New Mexico. That's southwestnewmexico.org, and you will be very tempted with all the many activities over in that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Let's welcome now the weekend watch host, Mr. Dan Gibson. Dan, how was your week, and are you looking forward to a weekend?
Yeah, I mean, once I get off this call, I'm just like packing it up. I'm out of here. Apparently, you told my bosses that the weekend has begun. So
it has officially begun. Yes, you have to honor that. So what do we got going this weekend?
Right. It's really been a nice addition to Tucson's landscape, the Century Room in the Hotel Congress. It used to be the Copper Hall, weddings and things in there just off of the front lobby. But the Century Room, where they moved the entrance over to the corner of Congress and Fifth, and it's been a really great asset. It might be one of the best jazz clubs in the Western United States. They will be having their second year anniversary party tonight. Two shows, 7 and 9 p.m., celebrating the Century Room with a number of your Century Room favorites, including Angelo Versace, Arthur Vint, Matt Mitchell, Scott Black, as well as other Century Room regulars and surprises. All proceeds from the ticket sales will go to getting the new piano. So it's a win-win for everybody involved, basically.
I hear a lot of good things about
the Century. If you enjoy jazz and you haven't been to the Century Room yet.
Yeah, good.
It's
good
excellent.
Stuff.
Really excellent. Great sound, great booking, great drinks. $10 cocktails after 10 p.m. So
very cool.
Something to put in the mix there as well.
All right. What else is going on?
Everyone loves art. I mean, I think, people love art, right?
I think so.
The Tucson Museum of Art and Historic Block. Yeah,
that's
my understanding.
Yeah.
If you ever wanted to know more about Andy Warhol, I mean, who doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
They're having a docent art talk Sunday from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. It's $5 for non-members, free for members or students with ID. And it's a discussion of why does Andy Warhol's art matter? Does it still matter today? You'll learn about his admirers, his detractors, and a little bit about his history with Tucson, Arizona.
Really?
So that's worth checking out. You just have to go to the Tucson Museum of Art site to get your free ticket or a $5 ticket. Yeah, I didn't realize he had a Tucson connection, but apparently it's there.
Maybe he visited once or twice. But
I'll learn more on Sunday.
Okay. I'll take another one, Mr. Gibson.
Well, you know, also speaking of museums, it's going to be Arizona Statehood Day this week. That's I plan on celebrating. I'll get myself a cake, you know, just eat the whole thing. But if you want to celebrate a little bit early, the Arizona History Museum, which is part of the Arizona Historical Society, right by campus, U of A campus at 949 East 2nd Street, free admission all day Saturday. That's tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you haven't been to the Arizona History Museum, it is a good time. It's a celebration of all things Arizona, and you can prepare your heart and your soul for the anniversary of our beautiful state coming up in the middle of the week. There's some other holiday that happens at the same time that I'm not aware of, but February 14th to me will always remain Arizona Statehood Day.
Oh, yes, the Valentine's State, Arizona. All right, Dan Gibson, thank you so much. Yeah. Hope you have a great weekend, Dan.
I will indeed, starting right now.
Okay, your weekend has begun. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks to my engineer-producer, Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team at KVOI and Bustos Media Tucson. We wish everybody a great weekend. Be well, stay safe, see you Monday.